Hello and welcome to the Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology Podcast in conversation with. I'm Hugh Thomas, the Deputy Editor. In this episode, we'll be discussing an article published online first recently, a systematic review and individual participant data meta-analysis on the effects of urso deoxycholic acid in intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy. I'm joined today by Dr. Caroline Avardia, a Chadbourne Clinical Lecturer in Women's Health at King's College London and an obstetrician at Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. She is joint first author of the article, and her academic interests lie in the maternal and fetal influences of metabolic disorders of pregnancy, particularly concentrating on gut-derived endocrine signals and the prevention of adverse perinatal outcomes, including stillbirth. The other joint first author is Jenna Sejus, an MRC-funded PhD student at King's College London, who is looking at the mechanisms of preterm labour. Dr. Avardia, thank you very much for joining us, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. And on behalf of all my co-authors, thank you for inviting me.
So just to jump straight in, could you tell us a little bit about what is intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy and how much of an issue is it?
Intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy, I'm going to call it what ICP because it's a bit of a mouthful, is a liver condition that typically, although not universally, arises in the latter half of pregnancy and it resolves postpartum. It's characterised by maternal itching or pruritus, and it's classically described that it occurs on the palms of the hands or the soles of the feet, but actually it can occur anywhere. The severity of that can be very different. So it could be very mild, but other women will have incredibly severe itching such that it's completely debilitating. They're unable to sleep, wear clothes or perform their normal activities of daily living. In terms of definition, it's defined based on the itch, but also a blood test by elevated serum bile acids. These rise after food, and women can also have other liver dysfunction, particularly transaminitis. And we think that it's caused by the impact of increasing gestational hormones and environmental factors in women who are genetically susceptible. So rates are higher in women with twins or higher order pregnancies and those that conceive through assisted conception. And it's likely that that's due to higher sex hormone exposure in the pregnancy. We also see associations with selenium deficiency and vitamin D levels, and a number of genetic mutations have been identified, particularly ones in bile acid transporter proteins. So there is a familial link. If your mother and sister had ICP, you're more likely to have it, and you're relatively likely to have it again in a second pregnancy. In the UK, it affects just under 1% of pregnant women. And we know there are ethnicities worldwide that have higher susceptibilities, such as the Araucanian and South Asian women. Now, as well as suffering from what can be an intractable itch, women with ICP commonly also have gallstones or biliary sludge evident on their ultrasound scan, and they're more likely to develop gestational diabetes, dyslipidemia, and preeclampsia in their pregnancies. In addition to this, ICP is particularly important for the baby. Although 90% of women have milder disease and no increased risk of stillbirth, those with the most severe disease do have this increased risk of stillbirth, which is about 10 times the background population risk. And as well as that, women are also at risk of giving birth early, whether due to a spontaneous onset of their labour or if their labour is induced at iatrogenic preterm birth to aiming to avoid this subsequent stillbirth. And that risk of preterm birth happens for women with less severe disease as well. Babies are also more likely to pass meconium whilst they're in the womb and at earlier gestations than you would expect. And so their babies are more likely to be admitted to the neonatal unit than women with uncomplicated pregnancies.
And what made you decide to conduct this individual participant data meta-analysis now?
So this research aimed to determine whether treatment with the drug urso deoxycholic acid, which I'll call urso or UDCA, could improve these outcomes. Now, this has been used relatively commonly to treat women with ICP, but this treatment was based upon a number of fairly small trials, totaling only a few hundred women between all of the trials. And in these, the dosing was often a very limited duration, 2 to 3 weeks. A couple of years ago, three of the co-authors for this study, Lucy Chappell, Catherine Williamson and Jim Thornton, published by far the largest trial of urso in ICP. This was a placebo-controlled, double-blinded study, which was in contrast to many of the others. And the findings from this really surprised many people. UDCA didn't seem to reduce the main primary outcome, which was a composite of perinatal death, preterm birth or neonatal unit admission. They showed it had a minimal impact on the severity of the itch, and this reduction wasn't felt to be clinically significant. And whilst most women taking urso had a reduction in their transaminases, it actually had no impact on their total bile acid concentration. So we were left with a situation where we really had no evidence-based treatment for women with ICP that could improve their pregnancy outcomes. However, there is a reasonable body of evidence that suggests it might work for women with ICP. We know that URSO is a bile acid, but it's a non-toxic one. And we know that treating women with URSO alters the composition of the bile acid pool to be a less harmful bile acid pool. Similarly, it can also improve bile acid concentrations found in the umbilical cord blood from the baby. It could possibly reduce placental vasospasm, and it can reverse some of the pro-arrhythmogenic effects that the more toxic bile acids have, particularly those that rise in ICP and possibly as the cause of stillbirth. Realistically, the number of patients that you need to perform a clinical trial of a treatment to prevent stillbirth are unfeasible, particularly with sort of the prevalence of around 1% with the disease. So we decided to bring together all of the evidence that had previously been published and two further unpublished cohorts to really ask if there was enough evidence to determine whether UDCA treatment could prevent stillbirth or indeed affect any of the other outcomes for the baby.
And what were the key findings from your meta-analysis then?
So we looked at data from nearly 7,000 pregnancies, and still, perhaps unsurprisingly, we weren't able to demonstrate a significant effect of UDCA on stillbirth. However, when we looked at a composite outcome, which was stillbirth or preterm birth, we did show that this was reduced when UDCA was used in treatment. We saw that when we limited the analysis to clinical trials, so the more robust studies, or when we included all of the studies, if we limited it to just singleton pregnancies, we could still see this significant reduction. And those results, in terms of the amount of reduction, it was such that treating women with UDCA, if we treated 15 women with UDCA, we would prevent one of the composite outcomes, either stillbirth or preterm birth. So looking into that a little bit more, we could see that this mainly resulted from a reduction in preterm birth associated with URSO use. And it was significantly lower, just looking at preterm birth, in the trial data alone. Now, preterm birth can occur spontaneously. The woman could just go into labour or rupture her membranes, or it can be iatrogenic, where doctors decide in concert with the patient that it would be better for the baby to be born sooner rather than later. So they induce labour or perform an elective caesarean section. And what was really exciting was that when we really dug into what was causing this reduction, it was the spontaneous preterm birth that was predominantly reduced with UDCA use. So if we just looked at spontaneous preterm birth, you would need to treat 21 women to prevent one spontaneous preterm birth. We looked at it a little bit more to say which women are more likely to benefit from UDCA use, and we could see that this reduction in the spontaneous preterm birth occurred sort of really at all gestations, but mainly for women whose bile acids were over 40 micromoles per litre, so women with moderate to severe disease, and that's bile acids at randomisation or at diagnosis. There were other smaller findings. For example, UDCA use did reduce meconium-stained amniotic fluid and slightly increase the proportion of babies born large for gestational age.
Great. So what are the broader implications for this work then? Because obviously these findings seem quite traumatic in the context of earlier trials.
Absolutely. I mean, the simple answer is that women with ICP should be offered treatment with UDCA to prevent spontaneous preterm birth, and particularly for those women whose bile acids are over 40 micromoles per litre and those presenting before 37 weeks, because that's what we define as preterm birth if you give birth before then. And we anticipate that these findings are going to be incorporated into local, national and regional guidance. The great thing about it being such a big international collaboration is that I'm sure my many wonderful co-authors are going to be disseminating the message across the 15 countries from which they come as well. It's also good news for women with other cholestatic liver conditions, such as primary biliary cholangitis and primary sclerosing cholangitis, as both of these have fairly high rates of preterm birth. About a third of babies are born preterm, and they may well benefit from UDCA treatment. And I think sort of more holistically, we've also shown how you can combine research from different studies to get answers where it's really quite difficult to do research. And I'm I'm sure you can imagine that many drug trials in pregnancy aren't the easiest to get up and running or even to recruit women to participate in. And it's been really helpful to combine the data. You have to do that with appropriate and really robust statistical input. And we had a fantastic statistician in Paul Seed. However, the study did really underpin the value of randomised controlled trials that are placebo controlled and blinded, because those results really are the most robust and required the least adjustment for the starting conditions of both groups. And I think that is really important still when you're trying to bring in new treatments.
Where do you see this going in the future then? What next for research?
Whilst it's really exciting that we've demonstrated evidence of a medicine that can improve outcomes for the baby, it's clearly not effective for all women with ICP. We still can't say that it reduces stillbirth and it only has a marginal impact on itch. So I think what we need to move on to is complementing the use of UDCA with alternative treatments. Now, the good news is that there are other options undergoing robust clinical trials at the moment. The first is a drug called rifampicin, which is a very old antibiotic that we typically associate with treatment for TB, but it's safe in pregnancy and it can also impact bile acid metabolism, both by changing the composition of the bile acid pool and increasing their hepatic excretion. Professor Bill Haig in Adelaide is leading an international trial called Terrific, which is assessing the impact of rifampicin in severe early onset ICP. Alternatively to that, there's a newer group of drugs that have been designed to target the reuptake of bile acids from the gut via the intestinal bile acid transporter, or IBAT. And inhibitors of IBAT have been designed to block this bile acid reuptake and thereby increase the excretion of bile acids in the faeces. This is being trialled in pregnancy in the Ohana study, which is run by Mirum Pharmaceuticals, and that's another international study of women with ICP that's currently recruiting. I anticipate in sort of 5 to 10 years, we will have a choice of medications that we can give patients with ICP. They may even act in concert with each other as well, because they all work through differing pathways. And I hope we will have gone from thinking about ICP as being a disease that can only be treated by delivering a baby early, with the short and long-term impacts that prematurity has on that baby, to it being a disease for which we've got drug treatments in pregnancy that can improve both women's symptoms and their baby's outcomes, and therefore reduce the huge anxiety that currently comes with diagnosis of the condition.
Great. Dr. Vardia, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us and giving us that fascinating insight into your article and the concept of the field.
Brilliant. Thanks, Hugh.
You can read the article on ursodeoxycholic acid in intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Dr. Vardia, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology podcast, In Conversation With. Remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With wherever you usually get your podcasts.